Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden, and I'm working
at... An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show, Truth Straight Up. I'm Julie Hayden. Chuck Bonniewell, my partner in crime and my husband, is wrapping up some stuff upstairs. He'll be down shortly. But what a week in Colorado for the grassroots, for grassroots Republicans. I know Chuck talked with Randy about the victory with the judge ruling unconstitutional, a key portion of the law that requires us to participate in a semi-open primary, setting the way hopefully for an opt-out. But in an even bigger victory, Eric Grossman, a grassroots warrior, was elected vice chair of the Colorado Republican Party. And he joins us now. Eric, so if you want to go ahead and unmute yourself and throw your picture up, that would be great. So first off, welcome to the show. Congratulations. Thank you for your time again.
Thanks for having me on. In the end, though, group effort, group win. This is a much bigger effort than just me. I just happened to stick my neck out there. I think it's still attached.
Well, and you know, the vote wasn't going into it. And Chuck and I were bonus members, and we voted in the election. Britta once again didn't really allow people to comment. The chat section was off. When they held the straw poll, she sort of said, and it wasn't even a straw poll, it was a straw draw, and she rigged it so that her person...
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Okay. Well, we know that Eric Grossman loses. So you think you got the short straw, it means the other guy's got the better of it. That means that
but it wasn't,
Eric goes first. All right.
In the end, it wasn't even close. I mean, you won by almost 60%. You know, I guess what are your general thoughts on the election and how things went the other night?
I mean, obviously, we got the outcome that we wanted. So that's good. But once again, you know, it's just the whole reason why we've ended up in this position is we can't even run a basic meeting as an organization. You know, I think Alex is a good guy, but, you know, he obviously hasn't played enough poker to, you know, hold up his hands. And the first time that it was longer here, you know,
yes,
so you could
yes,
see it. And
if
the meeting would have been a little easier to raise your hand to get called on, I just would have volunteered to have gone first. I mean, the whole thing was just good grief, man. As I've said many times, we're one of the 50 states of the union, and this is the best, you know, presentation product we have. And it's embarrassing.
Let me explain that to people, because that was pretty funny and somewhat indicative of Britta's entire leadership.
Right.
So what they were going to do is they were going to have to see who would speak first. They were going to draw straws. So Alec, who's the executive assistant, had two pieces of paper, one longer than the other. And then he held them so you could see the top, but
and
he also held them so you could see the bottom, so you could see which one was longer.
Right.
It would have been funny, except it wasn't funny.
But then it didn't matter, because it didn't matter if you had the long straw or the short straw, you were going first.
You were going to go first anyway.
Right. That's definitely the way it came across. Whether they intended it that way, we don't know. But that's definitely the way it came across.
Well, let's have you talk a little bit about, okay, so the assembly is coming up this weekend. What do you want to accomplish here as vice chair, particularly in the short term here?
I mean, really, the same things that I said during the campaign. We have to get the organization to function as a professional entity. In terms of the assembly, I mean, there as a professional event guy and a planner, there's no reason for me to overly inject myself. We're too close to it now. Whatever process they've got going on is what they have going on. I'm certainly going to attend and be available should I be needed. That really is the only role. But at this point, whatever assembly they've got planned is the assembly that's going to take place. So moving on beyond that, to answer your question, I mean, the next big item is going to be the chairman's vote and how that's going to look. So I'm not overly going to rock the boat, nor do I think anybody should between now and the end of this weekend. So starting next week, though, my plan is to send out an email to the entire SEC and start to have the conversation of how this vote wants to take place. I promise you that my meeting is going to run a lot better than the way the rest of this has gone. Proof is in success. And so I plan to succeed in that regard, and at least the meeting hopefully will run and flow a lot better. And if we're going to have a straw poll, that we do that before the meeting, not during the meeting, and waste everybody's time to find out who's going to go first. I mean, that's just, good grief, that's absurd.
Well, you know, yeah, exactly. Particularly, you know who the candidates are. I mean, that's ridiculous. Right. What about now? Have you heard from, I mean, you're the new vice chair.
Yeah, again, congratulations. Let's work together for a short period of time.
I mean, your previous two vice chairs resigned in disgust, but have you heard from her?
Who are our allies? Right. And you're on the other side of the aisle on this one.
There was an email that went out last night, and I had planned on reaching out to Britta here today, Monday, but I ended up having to send a text last night because of something that came up and asked for her to get back to me. I haven't heard from her at all. No, it's been cricket.
Frankly, I mean, she didn't communicate with the vice chairs that she picked and that she liked. So so this isn't really a shock.
I'm not surprised. I mean, it is what it is. And that's why the no confidence vote happened. And that's why we are where we are. And here in, you know, a few weeks, we're going to fix that by electing new chair. And that's how that should be.
You know, one of the things I thought, and let me ask you, you know, your opinion on this, is one of the reasons people elected Britta, who was clearly the establishment Rhino candidate, is I think people thought that she might be able to have access to fundraising, right, and be able to do that. And as we've seen, the complete opposite is true. She's plunged the party some $230,000 in debt. Do you think that played a factor? Do you think people now clearly see that this was just a myth, that the establishment had any access to donors?
It wasn't a myth, they just got abandoned. Well, I mean, Ann Schutz and all the others are in for jungle primary, and you know, you can see it in John Caldera's columns, you can see it whatever you think is an establishment whiny uniparty thing, they all want the jungle primary. So Democrats do, the establishment Democrats, because Diane DeGette got crushed in the assembly in Denver a couple of weeks ago. So they're all for that. And there'll be tons of money, because last time there was a huge amount of money spent by Ken Thierry. And there'll be virtually no money spent the other side, but hopefully it'll come out the same way.
Do you think that I think people used to think that, and I think that people don't think that anymore. I don't know if you're the average Republican out there, you're like, Why should we stick with the establishment? They don't seem to be able to get anything done, and in fact, do just the opposite.
I mean, I honestly have a different take on what happened a year ago. My rural Colorado chairman's view, as the chairman of a small county, it was just like there's Trump derangement syndrome, there was Dave derangement syndrome. Okay. I think there was enough of a hatred against Dave Williams that they wanted anybody with Dave. Britta rose to the top, and she was the one that got put in. I never heard any prowess of her fundraising ability. Obviously, she proved that she couldn't do that. But when the election happened on the floor, as we were all casting ballots, it was really just an anti-Dave sentiment. And it really came also from the elected representatives. There's something that happens to people when they get into the state house. As a former mayor, I can tell you that there's some type of energy that gets excreted out of the Denver Capitol. And I've kind of coined it now as homogenous government. Everything just needs to be this homogenous thing, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. We've got this little, you know, cabal of colleagues, and we're all elected officials, and we're all just going to sort of toe this homogenous company line. Dave didn't do that, and they hated him for it, and they got rid of him accordingly. And in the end, you know, their champion against Dave was Britta. And love or hate Dave, he at least ran a somewhat of a status quo party. When you look back historically, every chairman's raised a couple $1 million through the course of their tenure. Britta didn't even get close in the first year to even getting half of that. So as much as they hated Dave, they almost kind of burnt the entity down. And now we're seeing that we can't even run a meeting. So there's going to need to be some reorganization, and just in the simplistic terms of, can we just run a meeting? Can we do the basic functions of the organization? We're going to start there and then see where we go after that.
Well, traditionally, for a lot of years, there was a donor class, included the Coors family.
Yeah.
Particularly included Phil Anschutz and some others. And they largely funded a huge portion of the Republican one. Dave, and I'll give him credit, a lot of credit, because I think he's the best chairman we've had, at least in my lifetime. And he was able to rob from Peter to pay Paul and come up with over $2 million. It's really a semi-miracle, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, without any of the big donors.
Without any big donors. So as a practical matter, and I think, you're judged, as everyone said, by who you get elected. Well, for the first time in years, we gained House seats. We stayed even in the Senate, we gained House seats. So, and all of those things, and he got Trump on the ballot, he did so many other things. He made mistakes, and he unnecessarily alienated people throughout. I'm not sure running for Congress and the chair was the most advantageous thing, but he was really, in a lot of ways, the smartest chair I've ever met on either party. But now we've got to try to move on and elect a chair. And I mean, it's going to be some tough choices. Because I'm not sure we can do with a conventional chair, because I don't think anybody who's just a conventional person, the Republican Party will raise any money. It's
Well,
just not likely. But we've got to try to get at least a party that doesn't hurt all the candidates. And
correct.
so that's all. If you're a candidate and the party doesn't hurt you, you should be happy. But that'll be, and people have unrealistic expectations because they choke the parties so no one can contribute to it. You have to do an IEC. So it's going to be a tough chance for somebody to do it for 8 months, 9 months, and I suppose you're in and will be reelected, hopefully reelected next March.
As vice chair. Well, you made it clear, let me clarify that too. Yeah, you made it clear from the beginning. You're not interested in running for chair. You want to do the vice chair. And I think you bring up a really good point that under Britta, things deteriorated so badly that step one is to hold, as you said, the first act of the assembly, and that's not your baby. So, and Britta's not even responding to you, being curious to see if she even introduces you. But
Okay.
let's hold a meeting, and that's step one. And then, because I've seen plans of that all these people have plans, and I think yours is the most practical and it makes the most sense. That's first. Figure out, and we know how to hold a meeting because you've held meetings before, and do that. And that's the first step, and then we build from there, right?
Yeah, the first successful moving forward component, in my view, is to get the chairman's vote meeting that everybody feels like ran better.
Losing a little bit on the audio.
Hey, Eric, they're saying your audio, if you can hear, your audio sounds
About that.
distorted. Okay, that's okay. That's modern technology. It's AI.
Try again. It was,
Boom. Let's see.
that better. Unplug and replug. Yeah,
Plug and unplug, unplug and replug
let
the
me probably do that.
earphones.
That's what I always do. Turn it on and then off again. Then bang it.
Yeah, then give it a smack.
Oh, you know what? I bet his video is frozen. Oh, there we go. Nope.
All
Okay.
right, let's try again. How's
Oh,
that?
perfect. Perfect.
Yay.
Okay, you were saying about the
Well,
holding.
so yeah, I thank you. Yeah, thanks for the chat tech support there. I've got to upgrade my game and get a better headset. In any event, though my whole campaign was about not overpromising and under-delivering. It's one of the most frustrating aspects of politics to me is that, oh yeah, these candidates get out there, and oh yeah, we're going to get 12 people elected, and we're going to increase our numbers this much. I mean, we can't even run a meeting. What kind of promises can you really make? So again, step one, we got to pour a new foundation for this organization before we start putting up studs and putting up walls. And I think first step is making the chairman's vote meeting run well, and I'm very committed to doing that. And if we succeed in that will be a stepping stone that will just, layer upon itself, and we can try to reestablish some trust. So my expectations are very simple. And to your point, yeah, I'm not trying to overpromise and underdeliver. It's just that doesn't make any sense. I don't get why people do that, but that's the political game that we find ourselves in sometimes.
Well, what I like is that you said you'll talk to the SEC members and see what kind of meeting do they want to have. right? You're not issuing an edict saying it's going to be this kind of meeting or that kind of meeting. It's like, let's just talk to the members who I think Britta seem to forget. The SEC, they are the ruling body, right? Not the chair, not the vice chair. So you seem to be acknowledging step one remarkably well right out of the gate.
Well, and I'm also in a position where I'm here. You know, I'm not running for the chair. I'm the vice chair. And somebody has to be the sane person in the room to say, well, why don't we ask the people what they want to do? And obviously, there's a wide variety of ideas out there. You know, for the rural person that has to drive a long way, Zoom is meaningful. But if we can't do that, then why keep trying that? I definitely agree with in-person meetings. I certainly want that, too. But we also need adequate representation, and we need to get the most people to the meeting to cast a vote. So I'm going to just throw a couple of ideas out there. We'll get some input. In the end, I'll make a decision and we'll run a good meeting. That much I promise you, no matter which format we choose. But I'm going to definitely bring it up to the body to let's have that argument before the call goes out. And I think that would, and technically from the way I read it, you know, the call can go out once the vacancy occurs. And I'm already researching that so that we're ready to make that happen and pull the trigger and try to reestablish some trust with two factions who can't get along in making sure that the meeting is successful. I think that's about the most we can hope for. And I think we shouldn't try to do any more or any less.
Well, that's good. And, you know, I guess you're going to too. As Russ Andrews is staying on as secretary, as far as we know?
That's my understanding. Yeah, he has definitely communicated to me that he's not resigning.
So, because one of the first things you're going to have the challenge is because I was an SEC member and now I'm not, because that all switches again on Saturday, right, at the assembly. So, yeah, you're going to have to, am I right? You have to do a whole new email list and things like that, too, which is always fun to do, right?
Or do you even I don't think the SEC part changes, because I think that's the reorg process, right? So then that
was a year ago. Uh-huh.
So I think the voting block stays the same. But hopefully we can produce a better outcome in terms of how it flows and not waste everybody's time. And it shouldn't take three and a half hours to credential people. I mean, good grief.
No. And that was, that's the trouble with something like Zoom. And you're right. There is no easy answer, because you're right. If you were, say you want to hold it in Steamboat, right? Well, that's inconvenient for us. But it's inconvenient for them, right? And so I understand what they're saying, but yeah, I'm going to just say this. So when the grassroots people had their meeting, it only took 10 minutes to get credentialed. What they need to have, I believe, are probably more people who know what they're doing. Just an observation.
But it's a practical matter. There's a real drawback. There has to be for key meetings, in-person meetings. I mean, I think being able to talk to people, be able to touch in, it's a huge difference than being on a Zoom where you're kind of sitting there in your easy chair just kind of going to sleep. The one problem with in-person meetings you've had for a long time is proxies, because it really perverts the system. It's who can get proxies from people, not who can show up. And I think we've got to get rid of proxies for in-person meetings. You show up, you vote. You don't. Because often with people holding, and in the past, there have been meetings literally where I think
there are more proxies than people.
No, there were like 288 proxies that Cory Gardner held for one meeting. So basically, he could dictate the meeting any way he wanted to. I think proxies have to go. If you want to get elected to the state central committee, you should be able to commit to do it. If you don't, then have somebody else show up. And it shouldn't be an unduly burdened, because I think occasionally for some of these things, Zoom meetings are fine. But it can't be for everything. And I think the main drawback, and I don't know how you feel about it, but I've watched all the effort is to crook the number of proxies you can get and then, you know, deny the other people their proxies. And it's a whole game we've been running, the establishment running for years. If if you're going to go on the state central committee, you got to show up for the one meeting or two meetings all year they have. If you don't want to, let somebody else run. And I think, who knows, maybe it's during this interim period, we can make it recommend and have a few changes that really make sense. But we're having an assembly coming up. Quite frankly, it's a weird assembly, and there's been a huge hubbub about who is going to be the gubernatorial candidate. with Joe Altman who's come in and out, Victor Marx, and Scott Bottoms, and then a cast of characters, a lot of them good people, but have no real chance. But notwithstanding that, I know their names. I don't know any of the names for AG. I mean, I've got to go study it because I'll be voting on them Saturday. I don't know who's running for secretary other than Jimmy Sangenberger. And nobody who hates Tina Peters like Jimmy Sangenberger is going to get my vote. And now we have the third one who's the treasurer. Well, the reason why is because nobody has a chance in Colorado. No Republican has a chance to win statewide elections.
Well, now you're talking to the new vice chair, Chuck. So don't be such a downer.
No, Julie, I get to talk. Remember, so we've got to walk before we run. And for me, anyway, the thing that divides the establishment and the grassroots, the basic one, is not pro-life. It's not pro-gun, it's not any of those. It's how we choose our nominees. Do we choose them in a semi-open primary that the Republicans who are allied with Democrats force down our throats? And so we always get, you always get the Joe O'Days, and you always get the ones, the rest of the party, Barb Kirkmeyer. I mean, she's not going to the assembly because she doesn't have the support there, but she'll go and get Democratic votes. And then how do you have a party in which all your candidates are left by others?
You support the opt-out, right?
I do. I think we can't do any worse than we're doing, so we should try something else. But it's been brought up recently that we do have to consider how that's going to function in practicality. And I think there needs to be a group that's going to get together and sort of flesh that out for the recent ruling that came out. But I want to backtrack, if I could. You threw a lot out there, Chuck, and I want to go back to something that is pretty evident to me, which is we've got to change the culture of the Republican Party in the state. You know, when you run for an office, you need to show up and cast the vote. And if you can't do it, then let somebody else do it.
Yeah.
We wouldn't like it if our congressional representatives were not in Washington, D.C. when the votes take place and they're out campaigning instead of showing up in Washington to cast their vote. The same should apply here. I recognize that we got a rural state. I live in a rural area. I know how hard it is to get to Denver to cast a vote. But we've got to start looking at ourselves in the mirror and point the finger inward and not outward, that we're kind of our own worst enemy in that we're not totally participating in the process either, which then opens the door for all these types of shenanigans you were talking about, the gamesmanship of proxies versus not proxies and who can show up to the meeting and who can't. And that's an internal problem that we have culturally. And I think part of it is that we've lost the culture of a winning team. We don't know how to win anymore. And instead we just sit around and bicker amongst ourselves. And that aspect's got to change. And the one thing that I hope will be demonstrably obvious in the next 10 months is we're going to find out, at least because I'm going to push this hard, how can we get along for the next 10 months and identify the people that, even if we don't agree on topics and policies, who can we get along with between now and November and who we can't? And the people that are just doing nothing but just throwing mud and rabble rousers and you can actually show up to the table and get along, maybe those are the people that maybe not be involved in leadership. Because if you're just going to only tout your side of the Civil War equation, however you want to put it, and you're not going to really willing to work with the other side, those people need to be identified, and we need to find the working group of people that can move this party forward so that we can change the culture and come back to a winning team. But right now, to me, that's one of the biggest problems we have. And then it leads to all these shenanigans that you alluded to, you know, several points back.
That's a good point. And you're a perfect example of that because Russ Andrews, who is the secretary, and you have not been besties, right? But the two of you have been able to, and you've talked about that, work together. And I think you're right. Certain policy issues can be debated later. Do you know what I mean? It's like
after November,
right? Let's be able.
Once again, the big divide is not on the policy issues. It really isn't. It's how we elect our.
Well, that's a policy.
No, it's not a policy. It's
well, the opt out. I think. Well, we could maybe not include it as a policy, but it's the biggest elephant in the room. Let's be honest.
Yes.
Yes.
You solve that one, and I don't care what the internal group comes up with, as long as it's Republicans voting in the Republican primary. If it's every Republican, then that's great. If it's a caucus, an assembly, that's great to me. But as long as the Republicans are electing Republicans, well, you know, the grassroots will win some, they'll lose some, and that's fine.
But it can't be that
Democratic leaning unaffiliates decide that, no, we love Barb Kirkmeyer the best. You know, if quite frankly, Barb Kirkmeyer were won the assembly, I'd support her. I'd vote for her in the general election. But she's avoided it, and she's going to let the unaffiliates do. And we have Gabe Evans. Now, I can't stand Gabe in a lot of ways because he's for open borders. But at least he won the assembly. He won the assembly fair and square, got 85% of the votes. So as much as I don't like Gabe Evans, I'm voting for him. And I, you know, I'll do whatever I can to get him elected because he went through the process and he's the one that, in fact, deserves the party's support. But as long as they go running to Democrats, who are the unaffiliated, democratically unaffiliated, you're never going to get grassroots like myself ever to support them. So, and let's face it, some of the moderates will not support some of the grassroots. Well, great, be a Democrat. I mean, the one thing we've got is that we're not this far away from taking over the state. We are this way from taking over the state.
Yeah, if we can't agree on that, then we have no foundational agreement. Yeah. That's 100% correct.
Well, Eric, let me give you, because I don't want to take out your whole day because I know you've got stuff going on. But does any final last thoughts or words kind of on the election, on your election and heading on into the assembly?
Gosh, you know, I think Chuck just nailed it, that we are this far apart. We have some serious issues. But I think we're only going to tackle them one step at a time. And success will then help sort of heal some of these wounds and get us back to an operational professional standard. And it's just going to be one thing at a time. And again, as soon as the assembly's over, I'm going to put it out to the body that let's start thinking about what kind of meeting we want to have for the chair's vote so that it can be a trusted outcome and have the body sort of weigh in on how that wants to look. I certainly have my ideas about it. I've already reached out to a couple of venues where I think we could hold an in-person meeting since I'm probably going to be the one running it. And I want to have some comfort level in being able to do that at a high enough level. But in the end, I kind of want to have the argument about the meeting before the call goes out. That's the strategy. Let's have a pressure meeting.
What?
We
lost you.
We lost you again. Hey, listen, we'll let you go, but that was great. Just thank you for your time. Congratulations. Yeah. Again, we are so glad to have you really in that spot. Right. So thank you for taking it on.
Right. Well, appreciate you. We'll see you there.
Okay, thank you. Eric Grossman there, the new vice chair of the Colorado Republican
He'll
Party.
Make a great one.
Oh, yeah, I think he will be. And yeah, I think we can, as you said, get it to the point where we can hold a meeting.
Well,
maybe, yeah. Baby steps. Here, Jacob had talked about, so we could, moving on, there are other things we want to talk about too, but real quick, Jacob mentioned that the, I think this is a CNN guy, right, that the Congressional Democrats numbers are not very good. They're even worse among all voters. Yeah, I think, you know, people are just...
But notwithstanding that, the what do they call it, generic vote, the Democrats are ahead by 6 points. That's a huge number.
Yeah.
That's a huge number.
The midterms, on one hand, they're coming up quicker than we know, and yet on the other hand, they're a long way away. So
yeah, they're both.
Yeah, and you're going to see, and I just anymore, and you know, here's the thing. I think if I'm a Democrat, I think you still are worried because the problem they have is they're not, they still are so tone deaf and they're not speaking to the average voter. They're on the wrong side of almost every issue. And they seem, you know, immune, or not immune, but just it's impossible for them to fix that. So we'll see. But yeah, I saw that same poll there too. Hey, wanted to talk a little bit about, because I just find this interesting, Trump on Iran. So now he's saying that if Iran doesn't agree to some sort of ceasefire, they had like some 10 things they wanted, all of which were insane, that Tuesday, it wasn't clear what he was going to do, but he's not changing the deadline,
well,
right?
Bomb all the bridges, take out all the production facilities, and maybe go after the desalination plants, which would, maybe cause a massive exodus from Iran. Who knows?
Right.
At least the desalinization plants, because then there wouldn't be any water for people. They'd have to go somewhere. But, Donald's running a weird war as far as I can tell.
Well, I don't see how you'd have a normal war with Iran, right? I mean,
well, you don't say every other day we're going to end this in a week.
Oh, yes.
I mean, you keep on saying you got till tomorrow, and then tomorrow comes,
right,
and they go, screw you.
Well, and here's what's going to happen is Iran will be like, okay, we'll negotiate. But I think you had a good point. We were talking about this earlier. Iran, they don't want to. They would rather lose gloriously than surrender, right? They don't want to surrender. I mean, and it's not.
They killed all their leaders.
Right, well, and they killed all their own people. Well, and they killed all their own people. So
well, they don't care.
Anyone who complains about the blown up bridges, they'll kill.
Right.
So it's like, it's not like they care. They're not like your typical, I guess, sort of Western democratic.
Self-interested.
Yeah, leader. Well, no, but what I mean is at a certain level, in the Western, they have to answer to a certain extent to voters, but Iran does that, they don't, right? And so I think that if you're Trump, I think, if you're Iran, I mean, if I can sit here and realize they're not going to negotiate, they don't want to negotiate. They want, like I said, they're happy to die gloriously because they have all the rest of the time of the universe to take, right? If they don't win this battle, then there's the next battle. I mean, they've been fighting this battle for.
Well, Trump said, they have no Air Force and they have no Navy. Well, quite frankly, the Taliban didn't have any Air Force and they had no need for a Navy. And yet they drove us out of Afghanistan and we were hanging on to airplane cargo bays. I mean, so you don't need a Navy. You don't need an Air Force.
Well, not
and they're going to have to. They don't want to. Certainly there's no appetite in the United States for a ground offensive, because that's the only thing that'll take him out. That is the only thing that'll take him out. And in between time, we can blow up their production. But they know that if they give up power, there'll be lots of retribution. You can guarantee if you're a mullah someplace, they won't be, oh, you guys are so much
that's
fun.
Good.
You guys were so much fun for that 40 years. Really, that's a joy to be around for 40 years. So they're going to, he keeps on going, you better give up. And they go, fuck you.
There's a part of me that would, rather just say, there's not going to be a nice, pleasant way to end this. So that just ended. It needs to end it quickly. But interestingly, Trump is also saying, and some of the media people are all freaking out about this. So somebody apparently, well, the rescue mission just seemed like, that's going to be a movie here in the next like 3 days, I think, right? I mean, it was astonishing. And Trump was saying, though, that somebody leaked that there was that second pilot that was still missing and stranded to a media organization. And Trump is like, we are going to lean on the media organization to tell us who leaked to them. We're going to call it a national security issue and lean on the media organization and figure out, where the leak came from.
Well, that could, the media organization, if they have any gonads or anything, they'll tell them to stick it. And then he'll say, well, bomb your family or something.
But here's what's interesting though. So I was trying to back time, but to see where did it first come out. And it seems like that there's a difference between, and they're kind of playing word games. Initially, the reports were one was rescued and one was missing. And then the missing became stranded, right? Mm-hmm. But I think they're kind of, but initially it seems like the first reports were actually in Israeli media on Channel 12. And there was another Israeli journalist who reported. And then the New York Times and then everybody else then picked it up rapidly.
I don't know who he's threatening.
He's threatening the leaker. Is who he's threatening. Somebody.
Which leaker?
Right.
Israeli leaker?
And that's what's unclear. Israel is now.
Is he going to threaten the Israeli?
Israel is now denying that anyone there leaked. So, I mean, I don't know. But it is kind of the way, I can tell you as a reporter, that something like that, there would have had to have been, I always would get when the police, you get a story, but they're going to find the leak. And it's like a lot of times, it's not like there's one person who calls you up and says, hey, guess what, Julie, this, massive international story, right? Typically, and maybe it did here, but it typically doesn't work that way. A lot of times, there are a lot of different sources, and a lot of times it's a media or a reporter putting information together. Right? You reading between the lines and trying to confirm stuff. So I would just say to the president, I like the fact that he's like threatening people who are leaking, because he's obviously that made the whole thing that much more dangerous, right? But it's not as if they're going to find.
Quit threatening and do. And if you find the leaker, find the leaker. But quit threatening everybody. I'm getting, and I'm a big Trump supporter, I'm getting tired of the threats. We're going to get the leaker, we'll kill everybody, you know. Find the leaker then. Don't keep on telling us what you're going to do. Do it.
But I think he's trying to do it.
Well, he's not. He's threatening everybody. And maybe the media organizations will give him up. I don't think the New York Times is. They can't, right?
I don't think, yeah, no, the New York Times, from everything I could see, and this could be wrong, it seems as if the initial reports were coming out of Israel.
Well, he's not going to get Israel
and
to do it.
No, I don't think so. You know, and who knows, maybe Israel, well, the whole thing is interesting, let me put it that way. But I'm just saying, I just want to say, as a reporter, it's generally not like one person leaked the information. And it's not even like a media organization and a story this big that could so obviously be proven wrong would go with that, right? So all I'm saying is it's probably kind of to your point.
They want a lot of other things.
No, but to your point, though, I mean, it's probably more complicated.
Yeah, I'm sure,
and Trump should watch that. But it is, we'll see what happens tomorrow. You know, I don't know. Because as you say, it's pretty easy for Iran to say, okay, now we're negotiating.
They appear not to. They constantly tell, you know, kill us all.
No, they sit down, they keep negotiating. They're kind of like Ukraine.
Who is negotiating? They keep on saying we're negotiating. And then they say, you're not negotiating because we're not agreeing to it. And then who's we? We don't know.
Well, Rubio's meeting with people. He met with somebody.
He hasn't killed anybody. I mean, they've killed all their negotiators.
No, that's not my point. My point is somebody is speaking for Iran.
Somebody's claiming to speak for Iran.
Right, exactly.
And right now they've got a lot of international Iranian Revolutionary Guard commanders. It's a diaspora of people who can speak for him because they've killed the main leaders.
Right.
So it's, you know, I speak. Well, I speak. No,
it's
I speak.
Of, yeah, it's like negotiating with gang members.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like, well, are you in charge? I'm today, you know, until something happens to me. And then until Bill comes along and says he is.
Yeah.
So do you want to, the other thing too, I just wanted to briefly kind of go back to the assembly. We'll talk a little bit more about this probably on Wednesday. Yeah. Just
check all the people who have no idea who they are.
The candidates are.
For treasurer, secretary, and attorney general.
But I do agree with you. I think one of the.
Looks like we got Jacob.
Jacob wants to raise his hand. Okay. Hey, Jacob, go ahead and unmute yourself.
The New York Times is still reeling from last Sunday's editorial that the NATO stands for North American Treaty Organization. Right now they are just beating up on Mr. Erlanger for writing that headline. How many eyes did that go by that they didn't catch it?
Well, I'm a publisher of a newspaper, and the reporter does not write the headline.
Yeah.
The editors write the headline, usually the first paragraph too. So Erlanger probably didn't write the headline.
But hopefully, if you're a reporter, you would at least look at your.
Well,
but as a TV reporter,
sometimes they don't even know.
I would look at the intro that they wrote.
Yeah,
Jacob,
yeah.
That's all right. Well, Jacob, explain to folks what you're talking about. People may not, because I saw this too. This is pretty funny.
I think it was yesterday, but a week ago, there was an editorial by a man named Erlanger, and he wrote NATO stands for the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. And he wrote it out as North American Treaty Organization. And then it has to go to the editor and the other editor and the publisher, and they all have to check these headlines. And not one of them caught the mistake.
No. And yet they're the ones who are going to jump up and down about Trump getting out of NATO, and they don't even know what it is, right?
That's right. They're the paper of, what do they call them? The paper of
record.
Authority.
Paper.
Yeah. Yeah. Not anymore.
Not too much.
Jacob,
not
thank you. Much. That's very good. I saw that too.
I just wanted to say, I mean, I guess this is an old story, but Boasberg is telling the Justice Department or whatever to return the fines of a lot of the J6 people that were pardoned by Trump. So he might be changing his mind a little bit. I'll tell you something. I don't think AOC is going to win.
No, I
have friends. Nope. I think that there's a lot of money going towards whoever the Republic. If she wins the primary, the Republican candidate's getting a lot more money than she is.
Wow. Well, you know, New York is such a mess right now, right? It's, you know, people are fleeing. And so you could be right. That would be really interesting.
Yeah.
And California has that Save America Act on their ballot for November. So that's going to drag out a lot of Republicans. They're even saying that Hilton, that that I think Hilton's the Democrat,
right?
And they're projecting him to lose.
Huh.
Even the Dems are projecting.
Well, they've got the jungle primary that Anschutz and others so much want us to have.
Uh-huh.
So you've got 8 or 9 Democrats and 2 Republicans. You come out for the general election, whoever the 2 top vote getters are. And for 2 Democrats, and it's 2 Democrats, it has been a lot of time. This time, because there's so many Democrats, the top 2 are Republicans. One being Steve Hilton, who's a Fox voice and so forth. And Trump, and I don't know who advises him sometimes. Trump endorsed Steve Hilton. And that's a huge strategic mistake, because it makes the number 2 guy more likely not to make the ballot. Hilton only has a chance if the second guy makes the ballot. And so whoever said, oh yeah, let's just endorse Steve Hilton because you like him. If you like him, then don't endorse him. You know,
well,
I
thought I read that Hilton didn't ask him to endorse him.
Of course, they wouldn't endorse him. Somebody told Trump, oh, don't you like Hilton? Said, sure. Without somebody saying that, would be the dumbest thing. You know, there are all these people sometimes you hear, I'll tell you what, I'll do whatever you want. I'll endorse you if you want me to. I'll oppose you if you want me to. Either way, it'll bring you more votes. But somebody told him to do the dumbest thing he could do for Steve Hilton, which is, you know, increase Hilton's votes and decrease the second guy's votes, who's the sheriff of some county.
Oh.
Really dumb.
Hey, Jacob,
really
thank
dumb.
You. Thank you for that.
Okay.
And if everybody was here and wants to look on chat, yeah, Thomas, thank you. Thomas found the headline, North American Treaty Organization Without America. Yeah, and first it's a snarky one, too. Whoops, they're trying to be snarky about it, too, which makes it even worse. So, all right. So back to the assembly, I think one of the, obviously, and we'll talk more about this, like you said, on Wednesday, I think the key race is going to be, and here there is a very clear sort of philosophical difference. You got Bob Kirkmeyer on the one hand, who wants open primaries. She wants jungle primaries. I don't think she's going to win. I think she might win the primary. You've got Scott Bottoms, who's sort of your grassroots guy. Not sort of, he is your grassroots guy who's opposed to it. And then we've got Victor Marx, who I have not been able to get an answer from anybody on exactly what Victor Marx's position is on the opt-out. Which I think has been part of the problem. People have complained about Victor Marx. It's hard to get an answer on any of his policies. No. And I guess one could argue, well, as, you know, governor. But that's going to be interesting to see how that comes out. You know what I mean?
Well, I'm feeling sorry for Victor Marx. I listened to our friend Peter Boyle's show on Saturday. All they did was beat up on Peter Marx. Victor Marx. And all I wanted to do was kind of... vote for Victor Marx after hearing all these cuck-sucking uniparty squishes all saying you can't vote for him, including Barb Kirkmeyer and John Brooking and all these other ones. But still, I'm not going to vote for somebody who isn't for the opt-out. I'm just not going to.
Right.
And otherwise, I might vote. I like Scott Bottoms, but I might vote for somebody they all hate so much. But I will not vote for somebody who will not tell me.
Not so, yeah. Well, and answer the question. That's sort of a key question.
It is the only question.
It's to other people, they're bigger questions, but you're right. It's a key question. So, anyway, so that'll be Wednesday. Anything else?
Is there anything else? Yeah. I mean, I want to talk about where are we going to find people to run for secretary, for treasurer. I mean, I think this time we've got a chance because, quite frankly, the Democrat, one who's now the Secretary of State, really is in trouble. But we have such belief that we can't take any statewide position. We're not getting anybody prominent.
Or anybody with money, so.
Well, nobody has money. Zero money.
Going back to what Eric Grossman said, is I think, you know, you do baby steps. And you go to the Ted Trimpa's Blueprint Colorado, right? The Blueprint Colorado didn't come out and say, we're going to take the governorship. Blueprint Colorado came out and said, we're going to identify, you know, seats in the legislature.
And that would be, and I'll give credit to, once again, Dave Williams. He picked out a few seats in the House and did whatever he could for those ones they could possibly take, and they took them.
Right.
I mean, the constantly say, well, you know, even the haters of Dave Williams say, well, he, you know, he increased the number of votes. Oh, well, you know, that doesn't really matter. Oh, okay. It's the only thing that
But I
matters.
think if you do that, and like Eric said, and you start out, first you start out by running a decent meeting, right? First you start
That's
by
step one. You're right.
having a
You're absolutely
professional
right.
organization so people can trust it. And then you go to what you said, first, do no harm. Don't be a party that actually hurts your candidates. Then you pick out a few races and up and down the thing, like the Democrats, they start in city council, they start in county clerk's offices. That kind of, you pick races that you think you can win, and you're not going to turn it around overnight, right? We didn't get here overnight. We're not going to turn it around overnight. And you build slowly. And you know,
Well,
I
one of
haven't
the
given
things
up.
that Britta said that was incredibly stupid as she made her campaign, you hear Republicans, we're going to contest every election. We're going to run everything where everybody, and you kind of go, you don't have the luxury. Find a few, pick off a few, defend those you have to defend if you can do that. But you know, endlessly going into races we can't win, including here in Adams County, is worthless. It's absolutely worthless. Yes, you can put a placeholder in there so they have to spend some money to make sure their candidate wins. But other than that, spend your time where you can win. And that's what Blueprint Colorado, they start with one race. Can we make a difference in one race? And they said how they did it. But yeah, and
And then they
then.
turn around and then they get to then, I mean, I think people will donate to the party and to a candidate if they think they can, if they think they can win. So, all right. Well, we'll see. That'll do it for us today. We will, on Wednesday, kind of do it more of a preview. And again, thank you to Eric Grossman. Thank you for running
Eric.
too. And everybody in Zoom and the great guys at BBS. And we will see you on Wednesday.
Bye-bye, everybody.